Today, we'll dive deep into the process of becoming truly thankful. We'll visit with Pastor Sam Crabtree, author of the book, Practicing Thankfulness, Cultivating a Grateful Heart in All Circumstances.
Romans 8:28, which tells us that he's working all things together for our good. We might wonder, well, what good is he doing? It's answered in the next verse, in 29, whom he foreknew and did predestined to be conformed to the image of his son. That's where God's going in every circumstance of our life, every adversity. God does not waste one shred of the adversity that comes into our life, but he uses it to conform us to the image of Jesus and to develop in us, by the power of his Spirit, the character of his son.
It's the weekend of November 23rd and 24th. I'm Jeff Shambly, and this is The Stand Radio. This coming Thursday, many of us will be observing the Thanksgiving holiday. Thanksgiving, without a doubt, is important, but the question is, how can we cultivate gratitude during the other 364 days of the year? Joining me is Pastor Sam Crabtree, who has served for over 27 years at Bethlehem Baptist Church in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and he's written a very helpful book titled Practicing Thankfulness, Cultivating a Grateful Heart in All Circumstances. Pastor, it's a pleasure to have you with us today.
It's a privilege, Jeff. Thanks. And thanks for what you do with this program.
Tell us a little bit about your relationship with John Piper. I know that you served as one of the pastors there, and now that you're actually moving to a different church, tell us what's going on there in your ministry.
Well, my relationship with John Piper began to develop before I lived in Minneapolis, and happened to intersect at some conferences, and he eventually asked me to become his executive pastor. And so I moved to the Twin Cities, and though it was not intentional, it ended up that Vicki and I bought a house next door to the Pipers. And In fact, that was not a selling point. I didn't know if I wanted to live next door to my supervisor, but Pipers are great neighbors, and you know, we hauled our trash to the curb together and shoveled snow together here in Minneapolis winters. And I worked with him for a decade and a half as a staff member there. And then I'm still on the board of Desiring God, where John is employed full time since he left the pastorate. And I don't worship the ground that John Piper walks on, but he's been very influential in helping me see scriptures. He's opened up scriptures to me that had laid there kind of dormant for a number of years. And so I thank God for John Piper, and I would commend his books to people and ask them to check out the Desiring God website.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, John Piper has had a great influence on me as well, so I appreciate you mentioning that. Now, your book is titled Practicing Thankfulness, Cultivating a Grateful Heart in All Circumstances. And on page 11, you've written that gratitude is pivotal. What do you mean by that?
By pivotal, I mean that we swivel, our hearts swivel or turn or pivot on whether or not we will thank God in all circumstances. That's the subtitle of the book, All Circumstances. I would wager that many of your listeners, Jeff, would say that they believe God is sovereign over all. That is, that they and we, you and I, believe texts like Romans 8:28, that God works all things together for the good of those who love him. However, we don't thank him like we believe it. Instead, I catch myself complaining as though I don't believe God is working all things together for good. And so a key text that helps me, that enlightens me about this pivoting, is what Paul wrote to the Romans in his very first chapter. He said, "For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him." And that word "or" in there doesn't mean that it's two different things. Like, you can honor God or you can give thanks to him. Rather, that means he's defining what it means to honor God. They did not honor him as God, meaning giving thanks to him. And since they didn't give thanks to him, here comes the pivot. They became futile in their thinking. Their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools. And with heartfelt concern, I have watched people who were on a path of Christian faith, they were moving forward in their sanctification, And some tragedy happened, some calamity, some difficulty, some adversity that was very painful. And I don't want to minimize the pain of it. But in that painful circumstance, they did not find themselves able to thank God in it or for it. And they became hardened toward him and bitter. And I think that's what Paul is explaining in this first chapter of Romans, that they became futile in their thinking. And he goes on in this chapter to describe how women are exchanging natural relations for those that are contrary to nature and so on. We see in our own day people who can't even tell a girl from a boy or a boy from a girl.
Yeah.
And in my limited number of interviews that I've done with lesbians and gays, for example, I asked them, tell me how you came to identify as a lesbian or as a homosexual. And at some point in their personal narrative, they faced a very hard circumstance. I remember interviewing one woman on the Capitol steps in St. Paul, Minnesota, and she was telling me about how as a child she'd been picked on the playground and so on. And when I asked her, well, if you think that there's a God, why do you think God allowed that to happen to you? Why would he put you through such difficult anguish in your young life? And she said, well, I don't know. I wish somebody would tell me. And that's the pivot point. That's the point. If we don't really believe God is working all things together for our good, we won't thank him. In fact, we can't thank him. And so part of my effort in this little book of practicing thankfulness is to show how God is working all things together for good. Part of the answer, I think, to people who say, what should I do when I'm diagnosed with cancer about thankfulness? What should I do about thankfulness? When my wife commits adultery, what should I do when my child dies? And these are very difficult and painful things. I don't want to minimize the difficulty of these situations. But when they happen, God is not done. He's not done ever. When Joseph is thrown into a pit and sold into slavery, God's not done. And when Lazarus dies, God's not done. When Jesus is brutalized and tortured and hanging on a cross, God is not done. And it takes faith for us to believe his promises that he's working all things together for good. But that is the key. And that's what I mean by pivot. When the adversity comes, will I latch on by faith to his promises that he is going to work all this together for my good and is working it right now for my good? Or will I say, well, he must have failed. He's a no good God. Either he doesn't care or he has no power or something like that. Just this morning, I was speaking with a woman whose husband died of cancer a few years ago at an early age. And she was describing how when that happened, it put her into such a fog. But she began to journal every day, and which she's done now for the last almost 5 years, observations of thankfulness. What is God doing to develop her Christ-likeness in this very situation of losing her beloved husband? And it's just turned the lights on for her. It's changed her whole attitude. She's very sweet. She's not embittered towards God. She's glorifying God for what he's doing, working all things together for her good. In fact, Romans 8:28, which tells us that he's working all things together for our good, we might wonder, well, what good is he doing? It's answered in the next verse, in 29, whom he foreknew and did predestine to be conformed to the image of his son. That's where God's going in every circumstance of our life, every adversity. God does not waste one shred of the adversity that comes into our life, but he uses it to conform us to the image of Jesus and to develop in us, by the power of his spirit, the character of his son. So anyway, that's what I mean by pivot. When you reach an adversity or any opportunity, it could be a blessing. There's a fork in the road and you can turn to the left or you can turn to the right. And either you will thank God for it or you will take him for granted or be bitter toward him because he's made you endure this suffering. So I hope, yeah, I'm helping explain what pivot means.
No, that's very, very good. Several things strike me in your description there. First of all, it is irrational not to give God thanks, and right thinking involves understanding what God is doing. The second thing is the importance of the Word of God, because without that understanding of what is in the text, there's no way we could know what God is doing. So those two things really stand out for me. In your book, you also write that gratitude toward God is an indication that a person is spiritually alive, awake, and alert. Can you tell us how that works?
Well, I'll pick up on what you said first, that thinking is rational. I mean, it makes complete sense that the one who does the work should get the glory, should get credit for doing work. And God is at work all the time in all things. So it's reasonable and rational to give thanks. I forget who said it, but somebody said, those who think, thank.
Yeah.
So the aliveness that you're asking about means that it takes a spiritual perceptivity to do the kinds of thinking that we should think. If I go back to that Romans 1 passage, it says God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. And so we need God's help to rescue us from debased thinking, to do what ought not to be done. And so thanking is evidence that I'm perceptive, I'm perceiving, I'm alive, I have eyes that see. So when I'm sitting in an office right now as we do this interview, and I can look out the window at a cloudless sky, it's just a brilliant blue sky out there. And we know that the Bible says the heavens are declaring the glory of God. Mm-hmm. But if I don't look out the window and recognize the gloriousness of that sky and who put that sky there, then I'm withholding from God some credit that he deserves for that sky. But if I erupt with the psalmist and say, well, the heavens are declaring the glory of God today, that is for sure, then it shows that I'm spiritually awake. I'm alive. I'm perceptive. I'm not dull or deadened or passive or indifferent to these kinds of things. So I hope that's helpful to people, that they would want to aspire to be alive.
In your book, Practicing Thankfulness, Cultivating a Grateful Heart in All Circumstances, you say that there's a relationship of our gratitude toward our security in Jesus Christ. What is that relationship?
Well, the capacity and desire to thank God in all things relies on or rests upon the fact that he's been good all the time, which is related to security, that he's never going to abandon his goodwill toward me. He has set his affections on me as his child, whom he has adopted. You know, I'm picking up on the Romans 8 text again. Those whom he predestined, he also called. And those whom he called, he also justified. And those whom he justified, he also glorified. He's put me on this conveyor belt toward glory, and he's not going to abandon me. As the Hebrews text says, he will never leave me or forsake me. And that security means that when, like the song says, when the sea billows roll,
right,
when the dark clouds come in, the frowning providence that Cooper wrote about, behind that, there is a smiling face, even if I can't see him at the moment. But there is a faith, a confidence, a trust, a leaning on his goodwill toward me as he has promised it. He who has begun a good work in me will be faithful to carry it on to completion. If I can hang on to promises like that, that will help me when things are stormy and the seas are rough. It was Job who said, the Lord has given, the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And all these things he did not sin with his lips. So Job had that confidence that though he slay me, yet will I trust him.
We've talked vertically of our relationship with the Lord, but what about horizontally? What's the relationship of gratitude toward the relationships that we have both within our families and our church members and co-workers and so forth?
Well, that's a very good question, Jeff. And I can tell you've done some thinking about this and some living. I would say the root is vertical. You have to send the root down in, and then what flowers up above goes horizontally. And it's true about thankfulness, it's true about love, it's true about forgiveness and mercy. You know, those who have tasted God's mercy towards them first will be merciful towards others. Those who are very keenly aware that they've been forgiven will be more readily eager to grant forgiveness to others. And so it is with thankfulness. If we are thankful to God for all things, all circumstances, the subtitle of the book, then we can see that all these people around us are means in his hands. These are the delivery mechanisms by which he's bringing blessing to my life, even if the blessing is a little bit uncomfortable from time to time. If some of the people around me bless me with happy blessings, that's easy to thank them. And to thank God. If the people around me are like chisels that cause sparks to fly because God is knocking the rough edges off of me, it's a little more tricky. But even there, I think we can find ways to thank very imperfect people for good intentions or nice tries or the things that they've done in my life that they may not have even done intentionally. We can thank God, and I'm going vertical again. We can thank God for people we've never met, people who've written books, people who were our ancestors that we may have never met. And then there are people in our lives that we have met, we've encountered, who have been on a continuum of very pleasant to us, very unpleasant to us. And we can start by thanking God for them and then be on the lookout for ways to be thankful to them. You have a copy of the book, and you know that the final chapter in that book, I list 100 ways to help people jumpstart their thankfulness if they are a little bit stuck on this. There are ways to be thankful to people for all kinds of little gestures as well as important gestures. I mean, you can thank the checkout clerk at the store for being cheerful or for handling your order and bagging your groceries or whatever they have done. And you can thank the pastor for his sermon, and you can thank the choir for singing. And there's an unlimited number of opportunities to be thankful all around us. And when we do, when we thank people, we become more observant. It enlarges and even completes our own happiness. When somebody does a good thing for me, I feel good about it. And when I thank them for the good thing they did, I feel even better about it. And another benefit is they feel good about having done it. And they feel good about our relationship in that moment. And it radiates light to others who may be observing that, oh, this is what thankfulness looks like. Mm-hmm. And it sure helps the environment around here when we say thank you to one another. So I think there are a number of benefits that come to us when we are grateful horizontally to the folks around us. It frees us from being discontented. It's more of a, you know, we're a race. The human race is a race of complainers. We love to whine and snivel and grump, and I'm one of us. I mean, it's easy to criticize, find things that are wrong. But if we intentionally go on the hunt for things for which to be grateful, we automatically start to exclude the complaining from our lives. It gets kind of squeezed out to the margin. And that's one of the benefits of being thankful. Also, it helps me grow in humility. God resists the proud,
right,
gives grace to the humble. I need humility. I don't need God's resistance. And if I'm grateful, I'm showing my need, my dependence, that I'm a beneficiary of the good that others are doing, and it helps avoid a spirit of entitlement, which is a plague in our society these days, people's demands and feeling that they deserve everything. It also, by being grateful, helps avoid bitterness in relationships. And I think, going back to the earlier part of our discussion, that whether I thank or not thank is pivotal, meaning it's not optional. I have a choice whether I'm going to say thank you or not say thank you, but I don't have a choice of the consequences that are going to flow out of that decision. And so I just want to seize and take hold of the opportunity to be grateful.
It seems like, you know, if the unbelieving world is by nature not thinking rationally or thinking correctly, then it follows that a person who is thankful would be giving a great revelation to those people. So if you would speak to the witnessing impact that a thankful Christian can have on an unbelieving neighbor or coworker.
Well, first of all, I would want to say that God himself has been a witness to everyone. And I'm going back to that Romans 1 chapter again. It says, what can be known about God is plain to them because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they're without excuse. So God himself is a witness. Meanwhile, to your question, our being a witness is to pick up on what God has already done. Paul is saying here that God has already given revelation about himself in nature, in the events that are going around all around us every day, day by day, night by night. God is speaking, and in order to disagree with it, we have to suppress it. It talks about suppressing the truth and unrighteousness. Well, here we come along in the strength that God supplies as echoes of what he's already been testifying to himself. I remember going through a checkout line recently, and I was given an excess amount of change for my purchase. I was given too much, and I paused, and I said, "You think you've given me too much?" And I handed back some of the money, and they said, "Why did you do that?" And my quick answer off the cuff, I don't know if you're like me, but sometimes later on, I think I might have said something better. But my answer off the cuff was, well, there's a God. And I just was trying to testify to the fact that there's a God, and we're all accountable for our behavior and our actions in front of them. Well, I think the same is true when we give thanks to God. Really thank God. I mean, it's become almost a vulgar speech in our culture. People say, "Oh, thank God," and they don't really mean that they're consciously thanking Jehovah for sovereignly provided some good thing to them. But I think we can say thank God in very what we might think of as secular context. We're not in worship service. We're not at church or anything, and we say, "Well, I thank God for that." Yeah. We run into our neighbors. We have next door neighbors. Our patios. We can hear each other and see each other on our patios, and sometimes we'll have conversations out there. And to just thank God for ordinary, mundane things that God has put around us, like weather, but there are other blessings that come as well. And when we point to God as the source of these good things, people are given pause to stop and think if God is indeed the source of those good things. And of course he is. And whether they will resonate with thanksgiving or they are just given pause, still I think there's a deposit we are making in their minds, in their hearts, that's just being faithful to the truth of what is. And you talked about earlier the rationality of giving thanks. It just makes complete sense to give thanks to the one who deserves the credit.
Well, you have stirred our hearts to explore this attitude of gratefulness in our own hearts. I want to speak to the person who's listening who says, you know, I love what you're saying. That's not me, but I want to step out in that direction and I want to be a grateful person. Can you give us a couple of different initial steps that we can take to begin a lifetime of gratitude?
Yeah, I just appreciate a person like that and their candor and their self-awareness to say, I'm not where I want to be, but I want to be in a better place than I'm in. I appreciate that. And I am that person in many respects. So thank you, Jeff, for representing that person. Yeah, I think just start with the candor that I'm not where I want to be. I'm not as thankful as I want to be. I may be stuck on a certain issue, some difficulty that's come into my life, and I just am having a hard time getting there. Well, a first step would be to admit it. A second step is to ask God for help. God, help me. Do the transforming, empowering work in my heart so that I would see what I ought to see and become what I ought to become by seeing it, and to do what I ought to do, in this case, giving thanks. And then a next step would be to rehearse the scriptures that shed light on issues like this. James says we should count it all joy when we encounter these many trials. Why? Because they're producing for us. They're changing our character. or Romans 5, or Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians that these light momentary afflictions are producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. I need to rehearse those verses over and over in my mind to know that God is not wasting this adversity in my life. And he's given me everything, life and breath and everything. We don't have anything that we did not receive from his hand. And therefore, it makes sense when I read texts like Ephesians 5 that we ought always to give thanks for everything. And at first, my flesh will balk at that. I don't want to give thanks for everything. But if I rehearse and rehearse and rehearse those texts, God can bring my heart around through the power of his word so that eventually I see it really is true. God is working this difficulty for my good. Like the woman I visited with this morning whose husband died at a young age, and she's finding that Christ is really developing his character in her through this very loss of her husband. At first, she was in a fog. She wasn't thankful, but her heart has come around as God has given her enablement. And so that would be a few steps. Be honest, ask God, search the scriptures, rehearse them, and trust him that he's going to complete in you what he's begun.
Our guest is Pastor Sam Crabtree. He has written a book entitled Practicing Thankfulness, Cultivating a Grateful Heart in All Circumstances. Everything that we've talked about today is in that book. We encourage you to get a copy. You can find it at christianbook.com. Christianbook.com, and we'll put a link to that on our podcast page as well. You can find out more about Pastor Sam Crabtree at the website thenorthchurch.com. thenorthchurch.com. Pastor, thank you so much for your insight into helping develop a sense of gratitude in our hearts, and we certainly appreciate you being with us and for writing this book.
Well, it's a privilege, Jeff, and I just want to commend you for what you're doing in this ministry. And commend to our listeners this God who is doing all things well.
Coming up next week, we'll explore the music of Christmas, and we'll learn more about the songs we love to sing. We'll also see how teenagers can rediscover the joy and wonder of Christmas by understanding what God has done through the entire storyline of the Scriptures. A podcast of today's program is available at AFR.net and also on iTunes and Spotify. Now, to sign up for our daily email or get a free trial subscription to The Stand magazine, just visit afa.net/The Stand. Have a great weekend and join us next time on The Stand Radio.